Hey guys, what's going on? This is the Cinepile Podcast, the podcast that discusses films that matter. And this is episode 18 and a half, because we're doing something a little bit different here with Cinepile. If you listened to our last episode where we were talking about Blade Runner, episode 18, we are going to be releasing one large episode, a little mini episode that's going to be our recommendations, and then another episode after that, every single Friday at 8 a.m. So if you got really comfortable with listening to some of our recommendations, just know that this miniature episode, that's where those recommendations are going to be now. This way we can devote more time to the other episodes instead of kind of making what compromises
in a way. Yeah. I mean, I think we were spending sometimes 15, 20 minutes sometimes talking about recommendations, which I love talking about recommendations, but of a program that we're trying to have 45 minutes to an hour, that's a huge section that we're not talking about the subject matter that we're trying to talk about.
It's like 33% of our episodes were devoted to something not that we were talking about.
And we couldn't even finish what we wanted to talk about, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And we still didn't even talk about recommendations.
Yeah, so and we had an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And that was a long episode where we didn't talk about recommendations. So we had as much time as we pretty much done in this show, and we still couldn't finish. So I think it's a good idea, to kind of separate and have these little just recommendation episodes.
Yeah, and we'll play these probably a little bit more fast and loose because, again, they're just recommendations, so kind of talking about them in a more casual kind of level. No deep dives, as you'd expect with our larger episodes. But, so kind of kicking it off, 18 and a half here. So Neil and I have some recommendations. Kyle is at a festival in Poland right now.
Yeah, he's in Poland.
For cinematographers. It's actually really cool. It's this huge cinematography expo that's held in some random city in Poland, where like all DPs descend and award what truly is the cinematography award. So Kyle will be coming back and he'll have his excerpts about that. So be excited as far as that goes.
I'm excited.
I'm looking forward to it.
I have no idea what to. I've never even heard of this before.
No, I've never heard of it.
How do I not know about it?
It's like
this?
The Skull and Bone Society of like cinematographers in Poland.
Yeah,
but I don't know. What do you want? Do you want to kick it off, or how do we want to?
Go ahead. I mean, we can start with, I know we kind of already, decided what we wanted to talk about today.
Okay.
I think up front, we're going to just start with Mindhunter. This is kind of a weird episode because actually both of these, recommendations we have are
streaming on Netflix.
They're both streaming on Netflix,
which I think is pretty handy.
And they're not really films. Maybe mine is kind of a film. They just split it up, but yeah. Okay, let's talk about Mindhunter first.
Okay, yeah. The more accessible one.
And a lot of people, I think, have already watched it. Or at least I hope they've watched it.
Okay, so let's first talk about the fact that it's being produced by David Fincher.
Yep.
And also, I just blanked on the name. She was the main female lead in Mad Max. Charlize Theron.
She's
the other executive producer with Mindhunter.
Well, now they have that whole thing in Netflix, so you could just skip the intro.
Yeah.
That I think I watched it like twice.
Yeah.
Out of the 10 episodes that were in it, and then I just skipped it every other time because I kind of binged it.
Oh, we binged it. We're not usually a binging household.
But we watched it together the whole time.
It's very often that Neil paces me and that I want to fucking watch 45 episodes at once. And you'll be like, we need to wait a minute. We need to digest what we just enjoyed and discuss.
Yeah, sometimes it's about the anticipation for the next episode. You can theorize in your head of like, oh, what does this mean? What's going to happen next or something?
Imagination is 99%. Yeah. Mystery is the best spice of life. But so diving into it. So David Fincher is producing it, and he actually also directed the first and second episode. So as you could expect, if you've watched House of Cards, it has that very chiaroscuro lighting scheme. So, bright brights, dark darks, kind of what you would call muted beiges or something like that. I mean, Neil.
It looks exactly like you would think an old, like it looks the time period,
mm-hmm.
the way it's filmed and the way it's colored. Yeah, it definitely looks the time period. If you've ever seen Zodiac, which I know you have,
mm-hmm.
but you listeners, if you've ever seen Zodiac, it looks like Zodiac.
Yeah.
And I love Zodiac.
And then talking about you listeners now, if you've never seen Mindhunter, it takes place in 1970s following these two FBI agents at the very beginning of what we would call profiling. and they're trying to figure out how serial killers work before serial killers even had a name.
Yeah, specifically profiling serial killers.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've had profiling, but yeah. Like we're talking about like using, and it sounds absurd that it wasn't really utilized before, but like it was almost taboo, but psychology.
Yeah.
Using psychology to like examine and anticipate murderers and serial killers. This is like the forefront of that back in what's the year, like 1976 or something like that.
Yeah, 1978. Early 1970s. Yeah. Well, and or late. Specifically talking to your point there, so, yeah. Was that there was a guy, the main director of the FBI. He said, it's not our job to understand them. It's our job to electrocute them.
Right.
And the main character, Holden Ford, which is kind of like this young upstart 29-year-old guy who's really trying to get after it, who partners up with his soon-to-be partner, Bill Tench, who's in the behavioral sciences department. And Bill sees something within Holden. He's like, hey, maybe there's something to this. And you get to kind of, if you like serial killers, if you like, you know, crime mysteries, Mindhunter, if you haven't watched it, it's a wonderful show. But they really start delving into the depths and the evil and the psychology dilemma of like serial killers. And it's kind of fascinating because even you as a general person, you're like, okay, I know what a serial killer is, but you don't know what makes them tick. And so that's what kind of, I think what makes the show fun is you get to see them tick.
I think what's interesting about it for me the most is that it's this really naive look into serial killers. Like us now looking at it, we're like, how do they not know about these people? Like, how have they never heard of a serial or like, you know, it's like examining something for the first time. And they honestly are coming up with like, and it's, you know, it's based on, I can't say how true to life this show actually is. I know it's based on a book these three people, like the main people that are part of the study actually exist. Mm-hmm. And it's based on this book that was written about that. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how true it is to that, but
the book is based off of this guy named Douglas. His last name escapes me, but he was in the FBI for 25 years in behavioral science, and he was the one who pioneered this serial killer study. And so, I'm not sure how accurate the Netflix portrayal is to what right. the book portrayal is. You know, it's kind of like, you know, how many shades of gray are you from where it actually was?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think let's just say, let's talk Ed Kemper. And that actor who portrays him so incredibly well. Ed Kemper, also known as the co-ed killer, is such a weird, eerie delight because he's such an interesting, like, what, juxtaposed character of incredible politeness and pure evil. And you get to know him so much through this psychological delving that they do that you almost kind of get to feel sorry for him in some kind of respects, because the whole thing is, can serial killers be avoided? You know, it's like, if you don't beat your kid and lock him in the basement, you know, is that what creates a serial killer? Is it endemic to them?
Well, that's kind of what's at heart of the show, is like when I was saying, it's like this naive look into serial killers, and they truly believe they're onto something that's a brand new idea, and they are, and thus it seems so like obvious. But they're literally discussing, like, are serial killers made or are they born?
Right.
And back then, at least...
Evil was evil.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, they were just born that way. And, you know, everyone, they were serial killer. It doesn't matter who their mom it was. It doesn't matter what happened to them. But the show is kind of like diving into, like, okay, well, maybe that's not necessarily true. Maybe it's both, or can it be both? Can it be one or the other? Does it have to be always, oh, it's just this black and white, good and evil?
Yeah, and they do a really good job of this, and the fact that when they're talking about who's a serial killer that I'm thinking of, upside down cross on us, Manson.
Charlie
Manson.
They
bring up Charlie Manson because I think they bring that not only up for the cops that they're talking to in this rural kind of education system that they're doing, but also for us, because right. obviously everyone Charlie Manson is the most famous serial killer in America.
Yeah, everyone.
And I mean,
but he didn't kill anyone.
Yeah, quotes around serial killer there because he didn't kill anyone. And you know, you look at Charlie Manson and you're just like, well, you know, he's evil. Like, you know, just I'm going to be this obtuse kind of objector to his character type. And they're just like, nope. You know, did you know his mom was a prostitute and the son had to listen to his mom like bang a bunch of Johns? And also he was, you know, just really, really messed up. And, you know, it gets into the depths of exactly what we're saying. Like, are they made or are they born? And it's a very just interesting look into that as far as answering that question. And then also there's this really fun leery question of, let's talk about Holden for a second here, the main guy. Granted, they could be hamming it up a little bit because it's Netflix and it's movies and intrigue is a lot sexier.
It's got to be dramatic.
But, you know, he talks about how he's 29 years old. He starts having a relationship with a girl, how he's never had a relationship with a girl since high school. So he's kind of like sexually stunted.
Right.
He talks about his mother kind of being this overbearing, you know, powerful figure in his life, which we kind of learn is sort of the arc within serial killers being made. And at the very same time, we're just trying to figure out, okay, is Holden crazy? Because almost Holden, in some respects, gets to have more understanding for, like, Ed Kemper. You know, it's almost like he's interviewing these people to better understand himself and to understand and to find almost a bond with these people because he's fascinated by them. And so it kind of plays with this fun question that exists within the show is, okay, is he trying to find out more of himself by interviewing others, or what's going on with that? So there's kind of like that fun little subplot that's kind of enveloped into that kind of thing, a little slipped in there.
Where like the whole like philosophical thing that's in the FBI that's happening is like they're starting to hit, like we were saying, they're hitting this gray area of right and wrong, black and white, good and evil, where before everyone almost had a biblical kind of ideology towards crime, where it was like
greed meets need.
They're bad people. That's it. They did bad things. They're bad people. So now they're kind of like going into this gray area, and Holden kind of like completely exemplifies the gray. Like he is the, he himself is gray. Where you're like, is this guy a serial killer? Like, is he, man, it's, okay, obviously we're talking about this, but spoilers. I don't want to talk about too much about it if people haven't seen it. But, yeah, spoilers. But yeah, like he seems like, and this almost seems bad to talk about, but if anyone is a fellow Redditor out there, this almost seems like it's a discussion of the mind of an incel. If anyone, like all these serial killers are these kind of interesting guys that like aren't good with girls and they hate women and they feel like they are owed something and they become violent. Like, it's this repeating trend in the show, and our lead character kind of follows that trend without obviously being a serial killer.
Right. Yeah. And yeah, 'cause Holden's very tight button, everything like that. But, I mean, ultimately, Mindhunter, I think what its strong bits are is it's something that is to be sipped. You know, it really slowly gives you bit more by more every single episode. Even Bill Tench, you know, opposite to Holden Ford, a little bit older guy, veteran, you know, very hard, very, you know, it's got that buzz military haircut. You get to learn more about him. And I think that's one of the more important things within, you know, TV shows especially, is the slow unfolding of a character and getting to appreciate who they are. And I think Mindhunter does that really well from the first episode to the very last. It spans 10 episodes, and I think every single episode, it never lulls. It's never a bottle episode. I think it's completely full. But Mindhunter, I'd say, is pretty solid, and you should check it out.
It's great. I think the one caveat is if you're not interested in serial killer kind of like dynamic or that kind of
or just heavy dialogue.
I mean, the whole show is like 90% dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's about serial killers. So if you're not about either of those, you might not like the show. I don't, you know, like
for
it's
sure.
Shot but, well. It, you know, it has great production value.
Mm-hmm. And another thing for a parallel, if you do like House of Cards, I feel like it's a parallel to House of Cards in the fact that it's very heavy dialogue based and it's plot based and intellectual based. So if that's kind of your jam, not House of Cards is just for you, but that Mindhunter is just for you. But Neil, you had a specific recommendation also.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, Mindhunter was great. Loved Mindhunter. Another thing that I watched recently, also streaming on Netflix, like we said before, is a documentary split up into three parts called Five Came Back. Sorry, I forgot the name for a second. Yeah, it's Five Came Back. And it is a documentary about five legendary directors in the 1930s and 40s that enlisted into the military during World War II to basically lend their filmmaking abilities to document and help the war front in whatever way they can. And the whole show stars five modern or contemporary directors and writers that basically embody these, or they speak on behalf of these other five legendary directors. So first of all, the actual directors back then were George Stevens, Frank Capra, William Wyler, John Ford, and John Huston. And these guys have some of the biggest movies, like classic movies in history. Like Frank Capra, people that know Frank Capra.
I've never heard of him.
You've never heard of Frank Capra?
I have never heard of Frank Capra, but I remember some of the films you were talking about, like, you know, they certainly buzzed a certain earworm within me.
Right. Like his biggest one, which came right after he came back from World War II, was It's a Wonderful Life.
That's right. Yeah, It was a Wonderful Life.
Right. So like that's that's a clearly classic one. George Stevens might be the least famous of them. But even he had Shane and Giant, which were really big. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen Shane, it's like a Western. William Wyler, he did Roman Holiday, with Audrey Hepburn, if you ever saw that. He did Ben-Hur. Best Years of Our Lives was the film he did right after World War II, which swept the Oscars that year. John Ford, classic.
Great Train Robbery. Right.
Is that what John Ford did? I guess he's like very known for,
I feel like John Ford, that was like one of his earliest things.
He's super known for Westerns.
Yeah.
So he did The Searchers. He did Stagecoach. He's made like over 100 films easily. The dude's a legend. And then John Huston, his first film he did was, The Maltese Falcon. And that's like a classic film school, like, film with Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah, anytime that I hear, like, The Maltese Falcon or anything like that, it's always just like, oh, yeah, like, this is a hands-down classic, and I've neglected to ever watch it.
Right. It's great. But so these five legendary directors pretty much gave up their career, or they stalled it, to enlist into the military and become essentially the Department of Defense's like propaganda / documentarians.
Dude, I came so close to doing that.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so like...
Really?
Oh yeah, like 100%. So, I mean, my SAT scores, they have to have access to some kind of data to where it's like, okay, your SAT scores aren't the best kind of thing. And seriously, like, as soon as I took my SAT scores, they started calling me. And they knew that I was in wrestling somehow, and they tried to recruit me. And I remember I told them that I wanted to get into film and everything like that. And they were like, well, no problem. We have an Army TV show. Like, it's like an Army channel, which they actually do have. And you can record and, document, you know, the war in Iraq. And you'll have a squad protecting you and everything like that.
And that's so weird.
Yeah, and I remember
told me this before.
Really? Okay. And that was an idea I actually played with for a little while, because my grandpa, my grandpa served and everything like that, and I remember the first college, the first time I applied to UNT, I actually got rejected, and the second time I got accepted. I don't know how that happened, but yeah. So like the Army was a very close like kind of thing for me, and I kind of thought about being like an Army journalist for a little bit, because I was really into journalism at one time, because I wanted to be a world journalist or international journalism.
I mean, as cool as that sounds, I'm glad you didn't do that.
Yeah, well, I
because then we wouldn't have Cinepile podcast together.
It was just such a chaotic war at that time, and I was just like, man, I'm gonna die. I just didn't have the guts that these guys did to go to World War II. I mean, because they had like the super intense, like 8mm cameras that were even used on filming Private Ryan or Saving Private Ryan. I remember that they used the same cameras from that they used in World War II because, like, they were so tough.
I bet. Because, oh, so that's funny you bring that Saving Private Ryan up, because so this show, it stars five contemporary directors, like I was saying, and that's Steven Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola, Guillermo del Toro, Paul Greengrass, and Lawrence Kasdan. And Lawrence Kasdan was mainly a writer before. He was a writer for Raiders of the Lost Ark, mm-hmm. and then he became a director. But each of those guys talks specifically about one of the directors that went back. And so Steven Spielberg based a lot of, like, the work that specifically, like, George Stevens and John Ford did on D-Day, he had to have been influenced by that to do the Normandy mm-hmm. shooting he did in Saving Private Ryan. So, the 8mm, I don't know. It's like, the show is, or the doc is, like, it's such a big scope in such a little amount of time. It's only like 3 hours total. It's like three.
Oh, I thought it was longer than that.
And it's like 3 hours or three episodes that are about an hour apiece.
Oh, okay.
And it's almost too short. Like, they could dive in, like, for several hours on each director.
Yeah, I was supposed to say, like, five came back. I would think there'd be five episodes.
It's only three. So it's a really easily, like, digestible thing to watch.
And does it have, like, a lot of really good, like, from behind the scene, oh, not behind the scenes, but, like, historical footage and everything like that that those directors captured?
It's pretty much, I think, almost everything that's shown is what they shot.
Okay.
But it's not really, it's about something specific. Like, so they could have had, like, historians talking about this. Like, they could have had just some random, like, people that right. know a lot about this talk about it. But they chose to use directors instead. Because it's, you know, the show is kind of about the insights into the filmmaking and the ability to connect with American audience. Like, it's almost just as much about the power that filmmaking wields as it is about World War II. It's about propaganda, and it's about the filmmakers that had to make it, or I don't even say had to make it. Like, it toes this interesting line of the usefulness that these films had and the truth and exaggeration that they had to, like, deal with. And that they were way ahead of its time. And it's just a very interesting case study. And I gained so much respect for some of these directors. Like, George Stevens, like I said, he was probably one of the least famous ones. Like, so much respect for George Stevens.
Why?
You should watch it. I don't, I mean,
okay.
I mean, I could tell, like, it's like an interest, like, the dude did comedies before World War II. Mm-hmm. He did, like, comedies, like, really lighthearted stuff. And he was, at this time, one of, like, the best comedic directors in Hollywood. And his first assignment is to go out to Africa to show the fighting in Africa. And it's like this super long journey he has to go through to get there. It's like grueling. He's sick. He barely makes it there. And by the time he makes it there, the fighting's over. And so he, like, didn't get anything for, like, a long time at the beginning of the war. He didn't get to shoot anything. He just, like, he basically lived with the soldiers, and he was basically, like, just a soldier. And his first assignment that he really got to shot was D-Day. And him and John Ford, they literally went, they were on the boats with cameras. They had, like, dozens of other cameramen that they hired.
Yeah.
They had hundreds of cameras that they just had on these boats. They wanted to capture everything.
Well, I had no idea they had hundreds of cameras. That's crazy.
Yeah, they had hundreds of cameras with dozens of cameramen. And they knew full well that many of these people would die. Gosh. Like, the people they hired to, like, shoot this. Mm-hmm. And they went out there, and I don't know, it's just incredible. And George Stevens, he was in the war for, like, 3 years. Some of these directors, like, they finished up early. Like, they were early in the war, but George Stevens was late. He was, I think, the first person, like, the first concentration camp that was liberated, he was there. And so nobody knew about what was happening. And, the like, he had all his cameras and stuff, and he's like, my role in this war has changed. I need to document everything I can mm-hmm. and get evidence. And I need to, like, show the world what's happening. And God. So while the documentary is about who these directors were beforehand, it's about what they did during the war. And then it's about how it changed them as human beings and what they did after the war.
And that's why I was like, you always have such great documentary recommendations.
And this one's a really easy documentary to digest. It's like while it is a documentary, and it even has Meryl Streep is the narrator of this. It's like a heavy, like, star-studded, you know, thing that Netflix pulled together. So it's an easy thing to digest. If you're not into documentaries, it's very good. And this is an interesting blend of, like, two of the things I'm super interested in. It's, like, for cinephiles, because it's about the history of Hollywood and the history of, like, some of the biggest directors that have lived.
Right.
And it's about World War II and just the whole conflict. I don't know. It's interesting.
Okay. I'll check it out for sure, because I actually haven't seen it.
I hope I didn't spoil it. Like, and it's a documentary, yeah, so it's, I mean, like, it's how do you have spoilers?
How do you spoil World War II?
Yeah. And I know this is a recommendation episode. We talked maybe a little bit too much about Mindhunter, too. Maybe we spoiled a little bit too much.
Yeah, but I feel like maybe probably could have dialed it back by about 3 minutes or so. Sorry about that.
That's fine.
But
got a little too excited.
I think it was a pretty good first micro episode, though, that we've done here.
This is super micro.
Yeah, super micro.
That's good.
And I guess to close things out, just so we talked about Mindhunter and...
Five Came Back.
And our previous episode that we talked about, if you're listening now, was Blade Runner. If you haven't checked that out, check it out. We're going to be also having another episode next Friday coming out at 8 a.m. So if you're traveling, you know, in your morning or something like that, we're going to be there chatting your head off, talking about films that matter. You know,
you'll see,
you'll find out. But you know, like always, guys, I really do appreciate you listening to episode 18 and a half here, one of our micro episodes. And the very special thanks goes out to Jesse James for his music contributions, as well as Stash Jenkins. Thank you to all those who have listened. If you can, write a review on iTunes. It helps us so much as a small little podcast. If you're watching this on YouTube or on SoundCloud, giving it a like or a thumbs up is great. If you write a review for us on iTunes, I will read that review. And if you have a certain movie that you want us to review, we will talk about it. We want to create a community here and cultivate something that matters. But, you know, once again, thank you guys very much for listening. I've been Cooper Carr.
Neely Anderson.
And this has been Cinepile Podcast, the podcast that talks about films that matter.